It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
Welcome to this episode of Kennedy Saves the World. Sadly, my beloved Portland, Oregon is still in the throes of irrationality. Luckily, there is someone who has been keeping score and taking names there. She has a wonderful podcast called Rational in Portland, because someone there has to be rational. When I went to Portland last year, not only to see my family, but also do a show with Kat Timpf. She was doing comedy shows in support of her book. She's been all across the country. And I was so amazed and excited to see the reaction of the crowd, because there are people there who are fans of Fox News who want to laugh, who know how ass backward their city has become and the entire region. And they've done a lot of things wrong there. Kristen Olson is not only the host of Rational in Portland, she's also an attorney and has experienced elements of mental illness and homelessness within her own family, which has really informed who she is, not only as an attorney, but also someone who is constantly surveying the city and really trying to figure out what are they doing wrong. So as you know, in Portland, they had some pretty sweeping drug decriminalization laws that have not really gone the best way. And I know there are people who are proponents of criminal justice reform who say that there might not be a correlation between the decriminalization and the fact that Portland has the second highest overdose rate in the country, but maybe there is. So now the pendulum is swinging back. The governor just signed a bill that sort of dials back that sweeping decriminalization. Kristen, welcome back to Kennedy Saves the World. So what is the state of criminal justice reform, policing, and drug use and arrest in Portland since the decriminalization went into effect? What are you seeing?
Kennedy, thanks so much for having me back on. What I'm seeing isn't very different from what I was seeing before, and it will probably take a while to get Portland back on track, if we can get on track. I'm very hopeful. Like you, I love this native city of mine. And so I am hopeful, unlike a natural resource or something, right? Like coal or honestly timber, which Oregon dealt with. It's not like we've slashed and burned something and we need to create something new. It's not like we're Detroit and we lost a car industry and now we need to find out what our next industry is. There are ways out. There must be ways out of this. The issue is just, you know, signing a bill that recriminalizes drugs, which, by the way, is, I think, revolutionary, Kennedy. I mean, recriminalizing drugs, that is language from the 1990s. That's like crime bill style language. And nobody wants another war on drugs. That's what's interesting. And that's not what this ultimately is designed to do. Ultimately, it's designed to divert people into detox and rehab, whereas before, you know, we just didn't have any way to incentivize anybody to get help or off the streets or get into treatment. Now, if they end up in the criminal justice system, which they will if they're caught with certain quantities of hard drugs, or really just doing hard drugs out in public, then they can get diverted into detox and rehab and hopefully choose drug court and get better. We have a lot of issues. One is we just don't have enough police. Now this bill doesn't solve that. You know, we were 48th out of 50th. We're now 49th out of 50th in big cities for police per capita. We should really have three times the amount of police officers we have. So that's a huge issue. So, you know, we can recriminalize things all we want. We don't have enough police to enforce it. I mean, that's one issue. Another issue is we still have a DA who was not interested in actually using the criminal justice system to intervene and get people through drug court. Now, he has seen the political winds blowing, and there have been a couple polls that have come out, one commissioned by the police union, one was commissioned by Kevin Sabet, who was a three-time drug policy advisor in bipartisan White Houses, who I work with, and an Emerson poll. And both of those polls showed wide support for the recriminalization of drugs and amending Measure 110, which decriminalized all drugs. And our DA, who interestingly had just taken $30,000 from the Drug Policy Alliance, which brought us in Oregon the decriminalization of drugs, he testified to the legislature that he agreed with these amendments, and he thought 110 was a mistake. He was somebody who helped bring us 110. So, I mean, even he gets it. Now, he hasn't gone an extra step further to bring us drug court for anybody who's not a very, very serious criminal offender, a Measure 11 offender. So that's the worst of all crimes. Those are the people who get drug court, which is bizarre, because in my opinion, those are, you know, murderers, rapists.
Well, also, you know, you talk about Oregon ranking 49th out of 50th, or is it Portland in terms of police staffing? The state ranks 50th out of 50th for getting people into treatment. So whatever do-goodery, whatever good intentions sort of waves these people into office, because they do ride these waves of promises and progressivism, they're all lies. And, you know, they hate cops and they despise data because it shows that their policies fly in the face of reason. And you have people, and we're seeing it in San Francisco, in Seattle, in Denver, in New York City, in Chicago. You have the same people who are reoffending and they get desk tickets. There was a guy who punched a 9-year-old kid in the face who was, you know, assaulted someone not that long ago and, you know, didn't get bail, and he's back out on the streets. And these are totally, wholly unsurprising crimes. But these awful DAs like Mike Schmidt and Alvin Bragg,
right,
and, you know, along with George Gascon, are some of the very worst in the country, and their policies are failing utterly. And I don't know what their alternative is, because what happens is, and we see this, you know, we get whiplash from it because we have these law and order, you know, again, 93, 94 crime bill, these warriors who go in and just want to throw everyone in prison. And it's the wrong thing to do. We over-incarcerate people and the wrong people go to prison. But the people who are violent offenders who should be in prison, it's because of people like Mike Schmidt. They hate cops. Doesn't matter if these people get arrested, they're not going to see any accountability. So that's one thing. So it makes you scared to live in your city. But then you have the permissibility and people who tend to make it seem like if you don't allow people to poop and live on the street, that you are a horrible person. And, you know, then Portland passes these laws that people can rest wherever they want, because sometimes people just need rest. And you have dealt with this in your own family. So if you can't convince your family members to get off the streets, what's a better way for the government to do it? What's a practical, actual way? Like, what are some policies that would work on people who have been ravaged by drugs and mental illness?
Yeah, that's right, Kennedy. And I think it's a good point what you talked about, how, you know, this crime bill stuff isn't great either, just to put a pin in that. One thing that's interesting about Oregon is we've been sold this false narrative that, hey, we need decriminalization of drugs because before we were incarcerating everybody for drugs. Oregon never incarcerated people for doing drugs. I mean, they didn't. They've never incarcerated people for public use. It's in the Department of Corrections statistics. That was a false narrative that was pushed on us, and that everybody just keeps repeating. So, you know, Portland has always been relatively progressive and has never been super interested in throwing everybody in jail. That's one thing that we've kind of done right. It's just like you said, we've swung too far left. So now the question is, okay, fine. What do we do to try to get back on track and get these people off the street and realize that For instance, addiction is a disease of denial, and there's got to be some kind of exit ramp. And I think, like you said, we're last in the country for treatment, for access to detox and rehab. And we're one of the highest, if not the highest, for addiction rates. So with those two terrible statistics converging, I mean, how fast can we build out that infrastructure? We have one state hospital where the mentally ill can go.
Is that still Damish?
Yeah, it's I don't know what it's called. It's down in Salem, and it's just one. It's the one hospital. I mean, there isn't anything else unless you count like the emergency room, but there's no, unlike in other cities and places across the country, like Florida has the Marchman Act, where the danger to yourself or others really means something. Like if a police officer sees somebody out in the middle of the street who could be hit by a car, for instance, they can get that person off of the street. They can engage in a court process. The police officer can to try to get that person some help, and they can find it. We can't do that here because the threshold for getting somebody help is so high. I mean, you have to have, when my dad was, he didn't have an addiction problem, but he was really, really mentally ill. And this was up in the armpit of Seattle in Kent, Washington. But I just remember the police telling me point blank, like, this is the Pacific Northwest. And unless he has a gun to his head and he wants to kill himself, you're not going to get him into a hospital. He finally said he was desperate enough that he wanted to go in. He was out in 24 hours because by then, you know, he'd had a good night's sleep. He had some medication and he said, I'm ready to leave. And they let him go. So we really need to change this danger to self or others standard in Oregon so that it has meaning. Because when we deinstitutionalized, I mean, this was a long time ago. It really started during the John F. Kennedy era, because mental hospitals were terrible places. But again, just like with decriminalization of drugs, we swung too far. And now we have all these people roaming the streets who are dangerous to themselves or others. And then we've got the decriminalization of drugs and we've got everybody doing fentanyl really everywhere. And this is it's the worst of all worlds.
But so it doesn't have to be standard like that. So, and I saw one rationalization.
There is a middle ground.
Yeah. All right. We got more of this interview after this.
Hey folks, it's your man, Keyshawn Johnson, here to talk about Angie. Formerly known as Angie's List, your go-to home services marketplace for getting all your jobs done well. Now, you might be wondering, what exactly is Angie? Well, let me tell you, it's the nation's largest home services marketplace, connecting over 150 million homeowners with skilled professionals to tackle any project, big or small. As a homeowner myself, I always have things I want to work on for my house, whether it's general home renovations or fun projects like putting in a pool. With over 200,000 pros in their network, Angie makes it a breeze to research, compare, and hire pros, ensuring every job is done well. Whether you're fixing a leaky faucet or planning a full kitchen renovation, Angie's got your back. And get this, folks. Angie's pros aren't just any old contractors. They're your neighbors, often running small businesses right in your community. Plus, they've been rated and reviewed by others in your area, so you know you're getting quality service. So why stress over home projects when you can turn to Angie? From finding the best price to scheduling a pro at your convenience, Angie's got you covered every step of the way. So get started today at Angie.com. That's Angie.com, or download the app today to get started on getting all your jobs done. That's Angie, your trusted ally in home services.
I saw one rationalization is from an ACLU group in Washington State, right, saying, well, the reason Oregon isn't getting people into treatment is because there's been a lag in the funding because of the way the bill was enacted. It's like, there's no lag. Like, there's no system there beforehand. If you have systems in place, then you can have law enforcement and social workers and community outreach organizations all working together. There's a disconnect because the horrible mayor and the god-awful DA have forced that disconnect. And they have made it known that they hate cops. Cops used to be able to go into neighborhoods, to go into coffee shops and talk to people and find out what was going on in their precincts. You cannot do that anymore when you are seen as the enemy, when the people who are in charge are saying that cops, all cops are bad. How do you think people who are mentally ill and violent, how do you think they're going to respond? If you are a responding officer and you've got a call about someone, you know that they are a danger, but if you arrest them, nothing is going to happen. So they're demoralizing them. And it's my parents will never go to downtown Portland again. And that's so sad because it used to be one of the most wonderful, vibrant, yeah, artistic cities in the world. Portland was cool.
Not that long ago.
No. And now, like, and, you know, it's like my knee-jerk reaction, you know, people are like, oh, where are you from? Like, Portland, it's so great. And now I think about it, it's like, the Portland I knew does not exist, but I want it to, and I know it can, and I hope it's not as far gone as the entire state of California, but is electing people who are on a slightly rightward bent of the political spectrum of nutless wonder Ted Wheeler and, you know, horrible DA Mike Schmidt, is that enough? I mean, do individuals have to do something themselves in order to make the place better? And if so, what is that? Is it vigilante justice? Is it, you know, forcing their family members into rehab? Because, like I said, that doesn't work either.
No, you can't do that. And you definitely can't do that here because of the quote unquote civil liberties of the drug user or the quote unquote civil liberties of the mentally ill, which I absolutely don't understand because that ignores the fact, literally the fact, like the science, that these are people who have lost capacity. Their lives have become unmanageable. Like Kennedy, you and I know this. Most people with common sense know this. Sober people don't sleep on sidewalks. That's not the go-to when the rent goes up. You don't go, oh, I'm just going to go pitch a tent outside on the sidewalk. That's not how it works. We've all struggled to pay rent, myself included. You move to a different city or you find a different building or you get a different job. You couch surf. You don't set up a tent on the sidewalk. So there's a fair amount of denial going on. And I think it's an ideology and it's frankly a pathology. And like you said, what do we do? Well, I don't even know that we have to go right. I think we just need to be less left. Like this is so far left. It is right. It becomes.
Yes. It becomes authoritarianism.
That's exactly right.
Absolutely.
And it's so far left. It devolves into chaos and frankly, anarchy. And that's what we're seeing. And so how do we just move it a little more towards the center so we can employ, honestly, like real science has a bad name since COVID, but actual data, like you said, which mm-hmm. we tend to, the narrative or the culture, whatever that's been dominant since 2020 seems to tend to hate. Although given the polling and a lot of the people who've been elected recently and who I think seem to be doing pretty well in the polls now, who are running for instance, Nathan Vasquez, who's running against Mike Schmidt, seems to be polling pretty okay, which is amazing given that Mike Schmidt's the incumbent and also his boss because Nathan's a working DA. And I think that's very brave of him. Yes, we need to become civilly. I think a lot of people have woken up and we need to
then donate money to his campaign. If you have $1 million
yes,
sitting
that's
around,
exactly right.
Give it to Nathan.
Money. No, any money. Yeah. Vote Vasquez. Yes. Vasquez. So that number one, yes, vote differently. Number two, Kennedy, yes, I do think the citizenry has to get involved, not with vigilante justice and not with, you know, forcing people into rehab because none of that works. But ultimately, people need to start speaking up and they need to do it publicly and in their name. And I was afraid of this at first too, because, you know, culturally, the narrative was not in my favor and the loudest people in the room disagreed with me. But I realized that it was really important. And
yeah, it's
so
like the lesbian Native American coffee shop
exactly
owner
right.
who tried to have a sit down with police officers and community members so they could just talk about things, had her business destroyed. Destroyed.
Multiple times.
Yes. And, you know, it's like.
And it's still under siege.
So people look at that and go, she's a protected class. Like she should be the poster child for progressives. And they will stop at nothing to ruin her life and run her out of business. And she's just trying to have a conversation. She's not wearing a red MAGA hat, you know, telling everyone to vote Republican. That is bonkers to me that is what has become of that city.
Kennedy, I was in a city council meeting, and I think it was it was for a very common sense thing. It was to outfit, I think, police with body cameras. We were one of the few places that still didn't have those. Of course, everybody wanted them in 2020. Then it turned out they tended to exonerate the police and nobody wanted them here anymore. But we got them. We did get them. But I remember being at one of these city council meetings, and Mingus Maps, who's a Black city councilor, who's relatively moderate, was arguing in favor of these body cameras, which I mean, I think it's a police accountability tool. The idea
that absolutely. If you know that you're on camera, you're going to behave differently.
That's right. And so he was arguing in favor of the cameras, and a white woman, this is so Portland, a white woman stood up and yelled, "Race traitor," to this Black man.
Dear God.
So it turns out,
sit down, cracker.
It really doesn't matter what race people are. We don't in Portland, not we. I mean, I actually think the majority is sick of this. But this dominant, far, far, far extremist fringe left wing narrative that, hey, we really just need to elevate BIPOC voices. It turns out that's wrong. I mean, when we do that, Rene Gonzalez is another one. He's a moderate. They refer to him as a white supremacist. His name is Rene Gonzalez. His dad was a farm worker. He's Mexican. They don't care. They need you to think the way that they think. And if you're white, like Mike Schmidt, you get a pass. If you're a white man, Mike Schmidt gets a pass because he thinks the way that they think. So they're not going to vilify him for his race or his sex. But if you step out of line at all, that's really what it comes down to. They want everybody to think the same way that they
absolutely
do.
Absolutely right. It is groupthink.
It's racist. It's very racist.
And that, you know, so you have to break that stranglehold. You have to vote these people out of office.
That's right.
You have to appeal to good, smart, again, rational people, especially the limited government variety, to come in and to do better and not pay lip service and not appease these buffoons, because they are running good cities into the ground, and everyone needs to stand up for it. Kristen Olson, we'll talk to you again. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Again, her podcast, Rational in Portland. This has been Kennedy Saves the World. I'm Kennedy.
For more podcasts from my friends at Fox, you can go to foxnewspodcast.com. You can subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. Listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts, and Amazon Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app. Oh, go ahead and leave me a review while you're there. I'd love to hear what you have to say. You've been listening to Kennedy Saves the World on the Fox News Podcast Network.
This is Jimmy Failla, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a 3-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.